Good morning, and as you all know, we're spending this whole year on the paramis, these wonderful qualities of the heart. And since the first of the year, we've practiced with generosity, ethics, renunciation, and wisdom. This month, we're exploring energy and effort. Next month, we dive into patience. They've all been just rich. So here we are talking about energy and effort. The topic I had for my talk this morning started out as Confessions of an Out-of-Balance Dharma Student. Because last Sunday, Arv talked about the continuum of energy, and Carrie last Monday also spoke about this continuum. Arv quoted Jill Shepherd, the lovely teacher from, it's either Australia or New Zealand. She describes this continuum as superhero to slug. And then Carrie talked about strain, 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 then collapse. So as part of my confession, my continuum was do, 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 then zone out. So whichever description you use, you can see that there's kind of a sense of energy being out of balance. So as you all know, the five of us who share the Sunday team, we're part of the Sunday team, we share the teachings, we sign up for our date, you know, quite a ways in ahead of time. So I've had some time to practice with this sense of do, 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 then zone out. And I'm happy to say that the topic for my talk has actually morphed from Confessions of an Out-of-Balance Dharma Student to Energy and Effort, Finding the Middle Way. Because after all, that's what the Buddha found for us, is the middle way. And so I kind of went back to some of the basic teachings. So this morning, I'd like to share three things. First, kind of a short description of what this out of balance looks like. Secondly, how some of my behaviors and attitudes have contributed to what started as just circumstances. And then lastly, how the Dharma brought me back into balance, how I found the middle way. So I have a wonderful life, and I feel very grateful for it. My partner and I created this amazing village of small businesses, which is where I live and work. My home is in one of the commercial warehouses, and it's comfortable and unique. I have a big garden. I got plenty of room to do projects inside and out. Of course, there are all the property issues that come along with it, trees and roofs and plumbing and vacancies and internet service not being good and all of that, and it all needs attention. So that's part of the fullness of my life. And the other is that I've been part of Seattle Insight since its inception. I'm grateful for that. And I love volunteering. And I said I have done every job except any of the tech stuff, because that's not where I'm any good. And I'm also blessed with good friends with whom I want to spend time. So this adds up to a pretty full life. I've also been really blessed with having a lot of good physical and emotional energy. I've been able to get a lot of work done and still have some zip left over for dancing or playing cards or doing craft projects or whatever. Certainly as I've aged, some of that energy has been reduced, but I'm still grateful for all the physical energy and good health that I have. So this out of balance is that I actually have too many days that are over full with the business side and the volunteer side. On the business side, I'm in the process of trying to figure out how to retire from my business that I've run for many years. It's a small business, but as with any of businesses, there are a lot of administrative tasks. I found a wonderful person to be a bookkeeper, and I also have a new facilities manager, and The training takes time, both in figuring it out how to do it and to actually transfer some of the responsibility. We've discovered there are new programs that we're going to install so that the bookkeeper can actually work remotely, and there's lots of new things to learn. In the end, I think, you know, in the next few months, it's going to free up a lot of time. But for now, the process is just adding a lot more work to my day. On the volunteer side with Seattle Insight, you know, I love the practice. I love the Sangha. And many, many months ago, I volunteered to help with our opening celebration. We had three different dates. We finally have a firm date. Everybody write this one down. June 30th, it's Sunday, from 4 to 6 p.m. in the garden level at University Friends. So now this is right around the corner. So all of those tasks that I said I would do months ago all need to be completed. And then, you know, like the other assistant teachers, I volunteer to teach on Sunday. And then last weekend, four of us did a day long on the Brahma Viharas, and now Tim is training a whole bunch of new local Dharma leaders, which is very exciting. And four of them have expressed interest to join the Sunday team, and I've been, you know, volunteering to help communicate with them and get us going in that process. So some of the fullness happens just because of the circumstances of my life. But then there are things that I've added that has really created this out of balance situation. So I make a daily to-do list, and I would say 90% of the time they're unrealistic and they are seldom completed in one day. I also, you know, I'm grateful I have a lot of interests, and sometimes just wanting that desire to indulge in one of those interests adds to the busyness. The other assistant teachers who I worked with last Saturday for the Brahma Viharas, they kind of laughed at me because the day before was really full. I had work stuff and I was getting ready for the day long. And then I decided, oh, I need to bake cookies so that everyone will feel really welcome. Well, I enjoyed baking them, and the people who ate them enjoyed it, but sometimes there was an element of adding baking cookies being maybe one step too far. There's a kind of greed that operates in this whole process. The one that says to me, I want it all, I want to do it all. You know, as I've said, I love my life, and I bring a lot of interest into my day. But sometimes this loving actually feeds the overdoing. The other day, a plumber came to fix a hose bib, but it was at the same time that Tim offers the Tuesday morning sit. And I tried to do both. Well, you can imagine what my sit was like. It wasn't, I never really arrived. I get a kind of energetic high from having these days that are so full. And I watch the body getting all hyped up, this real pleasant feeling. I don't know if that ever happens for you. And it continues as I continue to do a lot, and I feel really good about it, and I feel satisfied that I've accomplished. And then I find that right after dinner, all I want to do is collapse and zone out. And I really, you know, I've listened to the Dharma teachings. I want to have a fairly simple life, and I actually most of the time do. But all of this desire for connection and for Dharma activities and to be a good steward of my property, it creates some real challenges. Some of you have had the privilege of sitting with a visiting teacher, Christina Feldman. She used to come for many years, once a year, to Seattle Insight. And she lives in England and doesn't travel anymore. But she used to tell us a lot that Westerners especially are just addicted to this ongoing busyness and stimulation. So, and you know, you can look at my life, and I'm certainly there. There's also a strong element of selfing in all that I do, a kind of look at me and all that I've accomplished. And, you know, I already know that one of the hardest parts of retiring is all the identity and attachment I have to my role as owner and creator of this village. My friends call me the Baroness of Pellington Village, you know, so I know that I have a strong identification and it's something that I'm trying to work with. Philip Moffat, who also comes and teaches with us every year, he often talks about how we folks think that we are the star of the show of our lives. And that kind of thinking, that selfing of I'm the star of this show, really keeps me striving and over-striving. Another thing that I bring to this whole out of balance is some of my views and attitudes. Even those days where I find a couple hours of making a cup of tea, sitting quietly, reading a good book, or doing a crossword puzzle, or just hanging out, there are these thoughts in my mind that come up of saying, oh, you should be doing something more useful with this time. You know, and that mind, that attitude is loud. So sometimes even when I take the time to just relax, it's more guilt-inducing than relaxing. Another aspect is that while all of us have, you know, the tasks that we have to do, whether we're working or just keeping up a household, whatever it is, we're getting those tasks done is a really good thing. But I often bring a kind of pushy, demanding energy to those tasks. And of course, our culture says so often, you know, be somebody, do big things, be important. There's a lot of energy that I bring and that the culture brings to this kind of out of balance. So as I mentioned, I went back to my practice and to the Dharma and I said, okay, if I'm out of balance, how do I get back into balance? And that's where the guidance for this, our sit this morning came from, the basic teaching of being with things as they are. This is the way life is showing up. It just is. There isn't exceptions. This is the way it is right now. My work life is very challenging. There's a lot of exciting things happening with Seattle Insight. It just is. So can I accept that basic truth of my life? It was a big one. Just that question. Being with the way things are right now. And then I shared this kind of question and kind of dilemma of whether being out of balance with a lovely Dharma group that I've been part of for more than a dozen years. So some of the wisdom that I'm going to share, some of the coming back to the middle way comes from these wonderful women. One of them is that remembering that energy itself is a verb and that it isn't static. It's not like all of a sudden you find balance and then it's there forever. Many of us practice yoga and there are days when you can stand on one leg and do tree pose and you're there, you're a tree. And there are other days you're just wobbly. That's another wonderful word that these my Dharma friends offered, is that right balance, that Arv talked about, not right and wrong, but I loved his image. The right is when you write a picture on the wall and you bring it back into balance. And my Dharma friends talked about right balance being moving and wobbly. That wobbly is often the natural state of things. You know, we strive to be more steady, but often what we get is wobbly. Another piece that came from these Dharma friends was when we feel more at home with ourselves, when I came to a place of going, oh, right, busy time lots of changes, transitions, lots of work to do. Oh, can I just be home with that truth, home with myself? And when I could be more at home with myself, it was easier to be at home with whatever life was presenting. And of course, this balancing, this verb, this energy that high and low and down and up and busy and more relaxed, it changes moment to moment. You know, one day somebody will say, "How you doing?" I go, "Oh my God, everything's too full, too much. No time to rest." And another day, a friend will ask me, and I'll go, "Oh, right, things are fine. Nothing really has changed in the circumstances, but it's my attitude towards it." And of course, I came back to the second foundation of mindfulness, which is Vedana, feeling tone. Remembering that everything that arises, we look at, we experience and say, "Oh, pleasant. Right, I like this. Oh, unpleasant. No, I don't like it so much." And all that I've really been talking about, this sense of overfull, if I can see it more as a passing phenomenon, I don't have to cling to it. Yes, sometimes it's unpleasant. Sometimes it's pleasant. One of the important things I realized is that if I don't name it as a problem that has to be fixed, I can just relax more with the way things have come together. You know, I also realized that with this arising and passing and the changing nature of energy, that after I retire, I'm going to probably miss some of the fullness of schedule. But that's going to be another experience for me to be with and know and not call it a problem either. So much of this being with life as it shows up goes along with another teaching of don't argue with the way life is unfolded. This is the way things are right now. And can I have the wisdom and patience to accept that these are the circumstances? And can I accept them without complaining about them? I think I might have mentioned something from Ajahn Suchito, a recent retreat a friend of mine had gone on with him, where he said that he wants to practice not complaining about life so that when he's at the end of his life, when he's facing death, that he's not going to complain about that either. And of course, there are some skillful means that I need to pay attention to. When I write up my daily to-do list, can I actually ask myself, what's doable today? Maybe make them a little bit more reasonable. And I've been examining these views and opinions about how I spend time and all this grief that shows up, this kind of wanting it all, doing it all. And I'm sitting and practicing with, oh, greed is here, wanting it all. How does that feel? And do I want to feed it, or do I just kind of know it, let it be? And this idea of this kind of aggressive, pushy energy that I bring to my tasks, I've been practicing with just having a little gentler, more relaxed, softer attitude and mindset. And then there's the question, you know, we've been practicing with generosity and ethics and renunciation and wisdom. And especially the ethics and the wisdom, I ask myself, you know, is all this doing, what is it in service of? Is it really connected to my values and what I hold dear, my ethics, what's important to me? And so all of the tasks that are in front of me around making a good transition with my business, it totally aligns with my values. I want to make sure that if something happens to me, my son is going to be in good shape. He's not going to be faced with some kind of crazy situation. often in these months that we've been talking about, the paramis, all five of us have quoted Ajahn Suchito a lot. There are four books that we've been using, and his book is one of them. But this morning, I want to close with some of the thoughts on energy and effort from Norman Fisher's book. His book is called The World Could Be Otherwise, and you can see it on the website under Sunday Sits in our resources. And Norman connects effort and energy with the previous paramis of generosity, ethics, refraining, and wisdom. And he talks about joyful effort and links that to a sense of integrity and wholeness. Really aligning our bodies and our lives, body, speech, and mind, our relationship to ourselves, to others, all of life, the ups and downs, is all folded into how we show up and what kind of effort and energy we bring. You know, we get out of balance and we know it and we make adjustments. So Norman's book is all about us being bodhisattvas. That's the term that is used for those of us who put off full liberation until we help enable the liberation of all. It's a very Zen thing, and also it's a Mahayana thing. And I don't really claim that, although I know that we never practice just for ourselves alone. But I find his words on joyful effort really inspiring. So I want to share a few things that he says. In his book, he talks about how joyful effort was still present even when he was running a retreat and he was sick. So in my own mind, I've transposed the description of being sick to my situation and circumstances of everything happening at once and lots of things going on, of things being really busy and full. And he says the joyful effort doesn't depend on things going well. So I'm going to read the section from his book because I really think it has a lot to offer to us. He says, when I'm sick in a retreat, I don't try to perform as if I weren't sick. I practice in the retreat as a sick person would. I modulate my energy to suit my condition. I try to practice smoothly and steadily, not too vigorously. I try not to waste time wishing for another condition. I just live within the condition I have. I focus more on just doing one thing. It helps me remember that I'm not in the retreat for my own enjoyment. I'm there for other people because that's my job and my life. Knowing this, how could I complain or wish for something else, even if I'm sick? When I think like this, he says, I get more energy, or just enough energy to do what I need to do, resting in all the breaks, or just enough and taking a few more breaks if I need it. He finishes this whole line of thinking by saying, this is the great secret of joyful effort, and perhaps its most important aspect. He says, joyful effort isn't something you do. Joyful effort is life. It's sharing life. It comes to you from elsewhere, flows through you when you're ready to allow it. Once you stop getting in its way, stop straining, stop thinking your life is yours and up to you, energy somehow appears, just enough energy given the conditions of your body and circumstances. If you have to do something, you'll do it. If you have to rest, you'll rest. Someone else will do what you would have done. I really found that so inspiring. Getting out of the way, allowing joyful effort to emerge. So it's so different from that straining and doing and the pressuring and pushing too hard. It's natural. It flows. And it's available when I believe I allow it to flow. And while he talks about making bodhisattva vows, I think it has to do with all of us. We are on our own path with sincerity and commitment. We know how to stay in balance with it all. We're not afraid of looking at what's inside. We don't need to deny or be ashamed of anything. We stand in the middle of our lives, occupying our own space, and we receive life as it unfolds. We stop arguing with it and turning everything into a problem that needs fixing. That, to me, is joyful effort. And he ends his chapter on effort by saying, the perfection of joyful effort can also be understood as courage. We go through all kinds of ordeals in life. We practice, we reflect and discern, we take actions, we're diligent, and we relax. And as Ajahn Sushito says over and over, and we do it for our benefit, for the benefit of others, and for peace. Thank you so much for your attention. It's really, we've all talked about what a privilege it is to be one of the assistant teachers and to offer the Dharma. And it's an opportunity for each of us who comes and talks on Sunday morning to go, huh, how do I know energy? How is it showing up in my own life? And I so encourage each of you to ask those same kinds of questions. And so as we go into our small groups, you know, look at how is life manifesting right now, and what kind of energy and effort is currently present. Are you naming it as a problem? Are you able to be with it right now? Do you find that you can access this joyful effort, or does everything feel like a chore? And it's whatever is there is just what's there. And you know, with next month, we're going to be talking about patience. And I think we need a lot of patience to be with whatever shows up in our lives and not expect that it's all going to be easy. So for those of you who need to leave, and I know there are some who do, thank you so much for being with us, and have a wonderful rest of your day. So enjoy your groups. Everything's clear. Any questions about the prompts? We're good. Okay, see you in a bit. Welcome back, everybody. I hope it was a good discussion for everyone, and I think you can unmute. If you want to go to the raise hand, you can, or just kind of go like this, and I'll see you. And I'd love to hear how things are going, what's happening with energy and effort for you. Yes, Julie, please. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, we had an interesting conversation about the kind of flavors of different types of energy. You know, how the flavor of aversion, for instance, is very easy to identify. You know, it's unpleasant. Whereas the flavor of the excitement over doing things you really love and everything, it takes, I think, a little bit more effort, so to speak, to sort of recognize that, oh, there's something going on here besides that sort of, you know, more expansive. There's a difference between like an expansive energy versus a very contracted energy. So, I just thought that was really interesting. And then the other thing I wanted to say, Suze, was just how much I appreciated the reminder of just being able to say, this is how it is right now, and accept however it is right now.
And yeah, if there are changes that can be made, the skillful beings, not just in practice, but in life, then we do that. And we do our best. I love how Philip Moffat is always saying, best as you can. you know. He keeps on reminding us. And you know, the flavors, it's such a good way of looking at it too, because the flavor of that joy of doing things we love, you know, when I talked about feeling us kind of a greed, you know, I don't want to let go of that joy of doing things that I love. And then we bring mindfulness on top of it and go, okay, am I kind of doing too much clinging around this and filling up every moment with things that I love? And what's that all about? So those good discerning questions that we keep asking ourselves, and not making whatever's there a problem, but learning from it. And how does it feel in the body? So yeah, flavor. That's, I like that. Some is chocolate and some strawberry, and you know, some might be, for me, if peanut butter is not my favorite, so that would be on the other side, you know. Yeah, thank you, Julie. Any other thoughts? And Jean, please. You having trouble unmuting? Yeah.
That's what I wanted
there
to
you
do.
Go. There you go.
Spent my time lowering my hand. I'm really grateful for this exploration of energy, because it's really apropos, and I have this excellent laboratory experiment I can perform. And I hate to make it sound like that. I have a neighbor two doors down who a year and a half ago had a stroke, and so she has very limited physical ability. And at the same time, her partner was going through pancreatic cancer. And about 2 months ago, he died. And she went into a tailspin and started drinking heavily and was actually trying to drink herself to death, which I think is like almost impossible to do, except over a long time period. And I realized at one point that if she didn't change her behavior, my energy for helping her was gone. And actually what's happened is that she kind of suffered enough that she pushed the button and it called the emergency services, and they took her to the hospital. She's recovered. She's sober now. And I'm in back to the place where I'm enjoying taking care of her as I can, but I get to just have total control over what energies I put into it. Yes, I'll take her garbage out. I'll put the containers on the street for her. I'll bring them back in. I'll get her mail. I'll do all the things. I'll mow her yard. I can do those things. But if I recognize that it's slipping towards that alcoholic influence again, I will just make it clear to her that she has lost my support for any interpersonal events. And that's a big lesson to me, because I have not ever known that before. Mm-hmm. I would just continue because it's my responsibility to take care of my neighbor who is partially disabled. So I'm so grateful for this month and for this exploration. It's incredible.
Thank you for bringing up the issue of boundaries. I never even touched on that at all. And so, you know, the wisdom of the Sangha. Yeah, setting boundaries for how we use our energy, both internally and externally, you're really what you're talking about, in that wise discernment of what's going to be for the benefit, for her benefit, for your benefit, for, you know, really asking those questions. Thanks, Jean, for sharing that. Sheila, please.
I just wanted to say, Suze, how much I appreciated the richness of that talk and how important the subject matter of energy is for me at this time in my life. And you said so many things that were so useful, and I wish I'd taped it.
Anyway. In a week to 10 days, Ken puts it up on the website.
Oh, lovely.
So, and you can also email me at suze@seattleinsight.org. If you said, what did you say about X? Because I have it written down, so I'd be happy to respond. But keep going.
Well, thank you. That's so useful. The big thing that I think I'm taking away is allowing, you know, the mind states that come with the lowering of energy. I tend to sort of vacillate between sort of fairly positive energy to very low energy, and the feeling tone of those, you'll be bringing more awareness to what that feeling tone is. And I couldn't help but be reminded, actually during our small group, about the judging, comparing, fixing that Philip talks about so strongly. And I realized very much so that that I'm judging myself when, you know, I'm in those low energy states and I'm pushing them away, and I'm also trying to fix, and I'm also comparing. And that has become really clear to me from today. So I really appreciate this.
Thank you for bringing those back in to our circle. And last weekend when we were talking about the Brahma Viharas and Jerry's talk on compassion and how, you know, instead of the comparing, judging, fixing, if we can just bring that sense of compassion to a place where it doesn't feel good, and it may be even stronger than doesn't feel good. It may be really painful. It may be scary. It may be terrifying. I mean, you know, all of those words. And a teacher who used to come often, Heather Martin, used to go like this and just go, "There, there, honey."
Yeah.
And I do "there, there, honey" a lot. It's kind of my way of you know, having the compassion, because life can be really hard, and the energy that goes along with it, our response. And thanks for reminding us of the, I don't know how many of you were at that weekend with Philip where he had us take the vow to not judge, compare, or fix. And then right at the end of the weekend, somebody said, "Well, are you going to release us from our vow?" You know, and of course, no is, I think, the main answer. We don't need to be released from that. Yeah. Thanks, thanks, Sheila. That was really helpful. Yeah. Anybody else? How are folks doing? The paramis are so rich. My goodness. And next month, patience. That's going to be fun. When Bill was alive, he used to refer to my patience as the P word. And he'd say to me, "Have you used up all your P word today, honey?" You know? So it's a pretty rich topic for me. Yeah. Anything else from folks? Let's just take a few seconds to just close this lovely sangha. And we've been talking a lot about Philip Moffat today, and these are his metta phrases that he always uses at his retreats. And I'll share them with everyone now. May we be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May we have peaceful minds and loving hearts. May we be healthy, strong, and vital. And may we know love, joy, wonder, and wisdom in this life just as it is. Thanks, everyone.